Well, today we have Wes Hartline. Now, Wes, if you're a longtime listener of the podcast, is the person I've had on the podcast the most. He was the first guest on the Patrick podcast, episode one. We had him again on episode 36, 55, which is one of our election episodes back in 2020, 74, which was right around like in the midst of the pandemic. Mm. And now we have him here back.
This episode,
yeah. And so number? Today?
No, yeah, like what number?
What? How many he's done?
No, like what? You were like 74? Like what is this?
Oh, this episode is...
How do you know what it would be?
Oh, top of my head?
Yeah.
Wait, we should know this. Like we're the podcasters. Let's see. 97?
Let's go.
Yeah.
You're almost 100, bro.
I know. We got to get a big guest for 100.
Yeah. What are you going to do?
Who are we going to get for 100? Let's get Jack White.
Who's that?
Stop it. Jack White?
I feel like I know the name.
But he's a musician.
I know, but what is
he? He was in the White Stripes. He made the White Stripes.
That's right. Okay. Sorry.
So not Jack White, because you don't know who that is.
No. Sorry.
I'm Gen Z, Dolly. He knows Gen Z. You're barely Gen Z. You're like,
I'm Gen Z. Don't say that.
Yeah, you're like,
no,
old.
Don't
you're
give
like
me old. That. You're no, like old. Don't say that. I take offense to that. I'm more Gen Z than the Gen Zers.
Yeah, oh, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're like old Gen Z.
No, I'm real Gen Z.
Yeah, you're, well.
No, I guess so. I am old Gen Z.
Yeah, what is?
I barely made the cutoff.
Yeah.
I'm like the beginning of Gen Z.
Yeah, you're like. Are you the beginning of Gen Z?
I think so. I think I'm one of the first, if not the first year, within the first few years.
Okay, wait, here. I've got it here pulled up. Gen Z is, okay, that's not a good, it says, oh, wait, here we go. Okay, with generation most likely being defined as people born from 1997 to 2012.
Yeah, so I'm literally the first year of Gen Z.
Yeah, so you're Gen Z.
I'm old Gen Z.
You're old Gen Z. You're the elder Gen Zer and like the youngest. Like you can, so there's millennialness like within you.
Is there though? I don't think so.
Yeah.
No.
There is.
No, because I don't remember.
What don't you remember?
Like, I remember landlines, but, like, I don't remember shit before that.
Well, and so what I would say for people who were born, like, in 97 and on, you're not 90s kids.
No. See? That's the thing. And all the millennials out here are like, you the 90s, bro. The growing up in the 90s. Like, I can't say that.
But some people who are born in 97, 98, 99 would say, oh, I'm a 90s kid. It's like,
no.
You were born in the 90s.
I wouldn't say that.
Like, yeah.
I would correct someone who said that.
Yeah, you don't, because you don't get the claim the year you were the...
Right.
It's when you were an actual kid.
Right, like, growing up. Yeah.
Like,
I wasn't playing NHL.
No.
You know, LAN party.
You don't remember GoldenEye like that. Like yeah. It just hit different back in the day, dog. Just hit different. You know?
Right.
So yeah, but Wes, now here's the deal about Wes. Wes is our podcast, I would say our boldest, like conservative guest.
Oh wow.
He is a Republican.
Yeah.
The conversation is a little spicy.
It's spicy.
It's a little spicy. It's a little
good.
So
get on your,
put on your big boy, big girl britches.
Right.
You know,
here's some viewpoints that
are going to be interesting.
Yeah.
But Wes is a good guy. He's a good friend, former roommate, actually.
Mm.
And, a big supporter of the podcast. So we love Wes.
Super dope.
All right.
Super dope.
Get into it. Wes Hartline. Peace.
Give it a sec for the pain to start. This wreck right here, it ain't for the faint of heart. They thought they saw the worst verse from the team of G-men who seemed like nerds at first. Once they get to know us, people dig us. Leaders in the fight for equal rights for niggers.
Patrick, you're back. It's been a minute.
The most decorated Patrick podcast host. Decorated in the sense of, like, you've been on here the most.
For sure. Yeah. Is this four?
It has to be.
It's at least four.
At least four. You were the very first. You were, I think it's four.
It's a,
we did a special election one. We did a COVID one.
We did do a COVID one.
And then we did,
I did one with Jeff Magruder.
And then one with Jeff Magruder.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's still been a little bit though.
Yeah, it's been a little bit. I guess, yeah, down. Since we've sat down.
Yeah.
And a lot has happened in the world.
You could say that. You could say that just in, like, our world, but definitely on planet Earth.
In our own personal lives,
yeah,
a lot has happened.
That's true.
And in the world. So, as folks, if you're just tuning in, we have Wes Hartline, who has been, I mean, you are a unicorn to this Nashville area, meaning like you were born and raised.
Close.
Oh, that's right. You were not born.
I was not born here, but I was raised here.
Right, so
I was raised here. I'm originally from Atlanta. Mm-hmm. I tell people I got here as quickly as I could for like a four-year-old. Like, it wasn't up to me. But no, so not a unicorn, but about as close to it as I can be.
Right.
I mean, yeah, like our story is I went to Freed, graduated, moved back home to Nashville, and then we connected around that time through a bunch of different folks at Lipscomb.
Right.
And then we lived together for a little while over just across the street from Lipscomb's softball and soccer field. Wow. And then since that time, yeah, you know, we
been good pals.
For sure.
Friends, comrades. Yeah. So, and then in the city, you have worked in not only in healthcare spaces, mm-hmm, you've worked in political spaces. You've worked in some business, mm-hmm, spaces too, and married two beautiful daughters.
Thank you.
And live in, I guess, like what I would call like the young families haven of Nashville.
Yeah. Nashville. Yeah,
South Nashville is like a young family's paradise.
It is. It's, yeah, my wife and I got married. It'll be 10 years this July. And then we have just recently 8-year-old and 6-year-old daughters. And, like, you know, we're in that area of town. There's a lot going on with sports and school and things like that. But, yeah, we love our little area of Nashville. It's a fun spot. We've got lots of – it's changed a lot even since we moved over to South Nashville, from kind of like the Green Hills area after we got married. And it's – I mean – What's been happening everywhere is now happening where we are.
Yeah.
Houses are getting torn down, and big old houses are coming in their place. And
yeah, so maybe that's where we start. What do you think about? And granted, people who listen to this podcast, we have a lot of folks who listen to it who live in Nashville. Obviously, we have people who are listening outside of Nashville, just because of just the way that podcasting works.
Yeah.
And the, you know, people who live out of state and they share it, and I know people live out of state, et cetera. What's your take or thoughts on, like, new quote, like this phrase that has been coined, which every metropolitan city, I would imagine, has this. It's like new Nashville.
Yeah.
And so, like, what's your, because I've had, you know, I hear all sorts of takes on it, and I'll even lead with, like, I was pulling up, you know, I'm a big Time Hop user. Mm-hmm. Shout out Time Hop. If you're a friend of mine, you know that I love a good Time Hop.
I love those picture texts from you on occasion where it's like, do you remember this 14 years ago? It's like, maybe I remember it.
People are like, what is this? Yeah. I'm like, I don't know, but here's a picture.
Well, like the OG Time Hop from you is the Waffle House promise to go to ACL among you, me, and I think four other people.
Yeah.
None of whom did go except you.
Except for me.
Yeah.
That's right.
I get that one almost every year on that anniversary.
It comes up yearly. Yeah.
I can't help but enjoy that one.
Well, and it says a lot, too, because we were all in a Waffle House together, and that was like, I don't even know what it would take. I don't know if that collection of people could, A, ever be gathered again.
Yeah.
and B, gathered in a Waffle House.
Sure. And like, let's be real, like, frank about it. Like at like 1 a.m., 2 a.m., right? Yeah. So like New Nashville, it's, when did you move to Nashville from Chattanooga?
It's like early 2000s, like 2099, 2000.
Okay. So like, as a person who's lived here for over 25 years.
Absolutely.
The city has changed dramatically during that period of time. And really, it changed a lot from 2000 to like 2008. And then from like 08 to like 15, there was like another really like big period of growth.
Yep.
And then this last 10 years has been really like intense. So my wife and I were doing something downtown recently. And I was driving around and I was like, this is unrecognizable to me. And I grew
right.
up here.
Right.
And so, like, the way I would think about it is I went away to school in West Tennessee in 2001, in the fall of 2001. When I came back, the city was, like, remarkably different.
Right.
I look around Nashville now, and I go, it seems to me that the city is super comfortable welcoming tourists and welcoming high-wealth individuals and pretty much nobody else. We haven't really built great housing for lower-income or even median income yeah. families. Like,
no,
nobody's yeah. tearing down. Like, I think about that stretch of property. Is it Glendale right there by J.T. Moore,
oh,
where
yeah.
Monroe Harding used to
yeah,
be?
Yeah.
And that was, I don't know how big the acreage is. Maybe 5, 10, 15 acres, something like that in there. And no single parent's buying a home over there.
Well, and yeah, and you're right. And I guess, like, and that even brings up a great point, which is, like, who even builds, you know, middle-class homes anymore?
Not in Davidson County. You have to go to Wilson County. You have to go to Sumner County. It's not in Williamson County either. Yeah. It's Cheatham. It's even Dixon County.
Yeah.
And so, and Robertson County, right. Rutherford County, absolutely. Like, the donut counties are maybe getting some of that growth. But, like, nobody's building a home for someone to buy in Davidson County that's $300,000. Like, that's not happening.
Oh, not a chance.
So, like, across the street from us, and again, South Nashville, a developer came in and bought a home that a friend of mine lived in. I'm pretty sure they bought it for, like, $450,000, and the house that's going up is 4,800 square feet. It's going to be 1,517. And so where we live now, we look up and down our street, and the families who move in look a lot like us today. Sure. They don't look like who we were 10 years ago. And if you were newly married in your late 20s, early 30s,
yeah.
even being dual income, no kids, you couldn't buy in our neighborhood today. I just don't know how you, unless you're both making yeah. six figures or whatever.
Right,
that's not
right.
a humble brag. I'm just saying, like,
this is what that's I'm just
looking
the reality.
At. I'm looking at the reality yeah. of the real estate situation in Nashville going, I don't think you're buying over here. And like, to buy in the Green Hills, Westmead, Oak Hill, Forest Hills area, it's just not possible if you're not making well into six figures. And even then, you're probably buying a fixer-upper. So,
but I mean, part of it is just like, we had this like housing bubble burst,
mm-hmm.
but it feels like no lessons were learned.
Well, not only that, what, so like, there has been a lot of building of stuff.
Yeah.
But it's not stuff that you could, well, I can't, maybe I'm revealing my like bias here, but like, we live in a 3-2, three bedroom, two bath home.
Yeah.
You know, we don't have the powder room off the living room. We don't have the foyer. We don't right. have the home office. Like, right. it is a very, I mean, our house was built in 1955.
Yeah. Like, it's a normal house.
Normal home. The year my yeah. dad was born. And it was added on to, so it was originally a 2-1.
Wow.
Okay. So if you built an 1,800 square foot house today in Nashville, you could probably still sell it for 6-7.
Yeah.
Because there's just no supply. And so what I think New Nashville has wrought upon Nashville is, people are unwilling to acknowledge that we can't keep doing this and make it possible for people to live here. Police yeah. officers, teachers, like my, without revealing too much, my daughter's teacher grew up here in Nashville. She and her husband live in Goodlettsville, and she drives in every day.
Right.
She's driving 40 minutes one yeah. way in the morning. She's beating the traffic from North Nashville area into basically South Nashville, West Nashville. And it's like, there is nowhere for her and her husband right. to buy a home here.
No.
Like, even the nations is yeah. way out of yeah, reach yeah. For
and
them.
I guess that keeps up the lure for a child to never see your teacher in public.
It's so ironic. We were at dinner last night with my daughters and my wife after we've done a church community group, and we go to a restaurant, 12 South area, and we walk in, and there's her kindergarten teacher. Wow. But this is a woman who's been teaching for 30 years.
Right. So she's been.
And her grandchildren go to school where my kids go to school. And it's like, she is the exception. She's not the rule.
No.
It would be very, very difficult for a teacher who didn't have an enormous amount of tenure or who wasn't highly sought after. But they also moved up here from Georgia, but they don't live in that area. They live, you know, down, I wouldn't call it Berniak, but like, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I do.
Concord toward Nolensville, where like it's still affordable, but it's inexpensive.
Not,
and so I think what we've seen a lot of is what Nashville needs is 1- and 2-bedroom condos, lofts, apartments. But what's not being built is, well, what's not happening is you're not seeing a 3-acre parcel have 12 quarter acre lot homes that are 2,200 square feet built that all sell for $425. $425 is still a lot of money.
Absolutely.
But like you could probably do a Zillow search today for homes in within a 4-mile radius of 440. And I don't know that you would find any that were livable for $400.
Yeah, if you do, you're gonna have to do some work.
You're gonna have to do some work, or they're being listed at a price that makes them a teardown. Yeah. That then somebody comes in and adds $700,000, and now they're selling it for $1.5 million.
Yeah.
So that's my concern for people who look at Nashville as like, oh, it's still approachable. It's like, no, Nashville, Austin, Charlotte. Like, if you want Nashville from 2005 to 2010,
oh, you're going
Huntsville, Birmingham. Yeah. Like
maybe Louisville,
Lexington, probably, but you're looking at a city that
reach for you now.
The opportunity is just not as much as it is now. Granted, the difference that you and I both have today is that 20 years after 2005, you can work remotely. So you could, not every job, teachers, nurses, there's all kinds of folks who can't work remotely, but you can't work remotely.
No,
like in your role as a minister at a physical location.
Yeah.
It would just be very difficult for you to do that.
Yeah.
But like, there's a lot of jobs that you could do.
See pandemic.
Well, exactly. So we had that conversation, right?
Yeah. It was not an easy time.
We're seeing a lot of folks doing the come back to the office thing really hard now. I think it stands to be seen whether or not that's going to be good or not. But like, there are a lot of folks who, if you really wanted to buy a home, you could go buy a house in Waverly.
Oh, sure.
And if you had to be in Nashville one day a week, you could probably make that work, and you could have an excellent life on a 6-figure salary in Waverly.
Oh yeah.
Maybe you'd have issues with schools. Like, we could talk about all that, but like, the dream of Nashville of 2005, I think is gone. Until we change our zoning policy here.
Yeah.
And like, I think we did talk about this at some point, but like, where we live, our area is zoned where unless you applied, and not you, but the you who owned that home
all those years ago
said, I'm okay with building two houses on this lot. Well, the folks that owned our home at the time said, sure, we'd be okay to that. But everybody around us said no. So my phone rings once to three times a week with someone asking to buy my property. And it's like, I know what I have. I know what I'm sitting on. And that is that if you came and bought my house, you could knock it down and build two.
Yep.
I'm not opposed to doing that. I think that would be good. I'm not really looking to move right now.
And where would you move?
That's the hard part about it. Well, and for us, it would be, well, you go to Williamson County.
Yeah.
We could basically get the private school experience by moving to Williamson County.
Absolutely.
But I'm fighting as a red dot in a blue county for like, I want Nashville schools to be good. I want them to be delivering quality education. And like, we can go down that rabbit hole if you want, but I don't know anybody who could stare me in the face and say, we're doing the best we can or anything. Like, Nashville schools need help.
They do.
But the only way to do that is to increase the tax base.
Sure.
Increase supply, build more housing so more people can live here. Like, too many of our firefighters, teachers, police officers don't live in the community they serve. They're driving 25 minutes in, and that's nuts. So
but I guess like there's a couple things. Like, I agree that like the public education within, especially in Nashville, Davidson County, is not where it should or even could be.
Mm-hmm.
But are folks really, I mean, I feel like this is a state city conversation, a state conversation, a country conversation, is do people, like, I almost think about public schools has the same rap as the phrase nursing home.
Mm.
You say the word nursing home, you go, ew, ick. And now when you say public school, you say, a lot of people say ick. And there's some people who's like, no, this is good, and it is good to have this for our community, for the public. But I think that there's so many people who are like, oh, to be in a private school or to be in like a fill in the blank charter school, what
magnet school,
Yeah. But it's like to say the phrase public school was like, ooh, like, you know what I'm saying? And I'm not saying I am completely right on that, but that's what I'm feeling when I hear people talk about schooling. It's just like the icky bat word is public school. Now, people turn their nose up to private. It's like, oh, you're so bougie for being in a private school. But then like I said, another like kind of hot take I have, it's like, I hate paid parking lots. You know, like the, like where you have to like pay when like a company puts up, like you need to pay to park here, and the business is closed and now they're paying like a paid lot, right?
Oh, I'm not going to die on that hill with
here,
you, but okay.
But no, I hate it until when? Until I become the owner of a paid parking
100%,
lot.
100%, yes, 100%.
It's like, if I had, so, now, and then even with the school, it's like, until I'm the one who is like, oh, I get to send my kid to private school, I will for sure criticize. But it's like, are you still big boy criticism if now you're a part of the thing?
Yeah. So actually, okay, I have a take on this. So, and without revealing too much, I've been in hospitals a little bit with some family stuff over the last two, 3 months. Man, like, you know what it feels like to walk into a new office building. Floor-to-ceiling windows, like all these kinds of things. And then you know what it feels like to walk into an older office building where like, I wouldn't want my office to be here. I wouldn't want to go see my doctor here or whatever. We have a lot of aging infrastructure. So where we are, we have a wonderful elementary school. It's a neighborhood school. We could walk all girls there. We do not make use of it because my wife has a job at a private school. We are helping to pay for the cost of public school in the city of Nashville and also paying for private school in the city of Nashville. Right. So I'm paying for it twice. Totally happy to do it.
Sure.
It's easy for me. And again, I'm not like, it is what it is. It's easy for me to look at public school in Nashville like, man, I wish it were better. But the only dog I have in that hunt is that I'm helping to pay for it. I actually don't have a child that's enrolled in a public school in Nashville, so I can walk into a PTA meeting and be like, you guys are not doing, you're not fulfilling your promise of actually educating my child because my child's not there. But I can still have an opinion about how they're doing it because I'm helping pay for it, right?
Right.
And your example is, I may not like paid parking lots until I own it, and I don't want somebody parking their four wheels on what I own without compensating me for it, even a little bit. Like, it doesn't matter to me that the business is open or closed. If you're using a thing that I own, I want to be compensated for it. In the same way, it would work with an Airbnb.
Right.
Or if you, like, let's say you put your car on Turo, you would not be okay with someone demanding to use your car for free for any reason. Okay.
Right.
I would love to see us reduce the administrative state in our schools and take that money and invest in better. Like, I want to overbuild our schools to such an extent that, like, people walk in and go, all it really needs is a fresh coat of paint. Like, this building is beautiful.
Right.
I think the bigger problem that we have, and this is not in Nashville, but you could apply it really easily.
Sure.
It's an America thing. It's like the gap between the worst and the best has grown immensely in the last 75 years.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So you think about investing, Nashville opened a new high school, I think, maybe in the Bellevue area recently, and it replaced Hillwood High School.
Mm-hmm.
What have we done with Hillwood High School? It's sitting there.
Yeah.
Is it Stokes Elementary that's across from Lipscomb? The city owns that property. The building,
Lipscomb has tried to
I think the building is pretty because
it's a pretty building.
It's a relic, but like we should be using that building for something.
Yeah.
It's sitting there. And if we're not going to sell the property, then maybe we should, like, I don't know,
Do something.
Build the new JT Moore there, yeah. But it needs to be four stories, and it needs to be a $200 million building.
Well, or it's like...
But like, what did we do with our public money in this last couple of years? I was talking about this with my family a couple weeks ago. When we built Titan Stadium in the mid-90s, we spent under $200 million in 1990s dollars to build that stadium.
Yeah.
The new one we're building is 10X, $2 billion.
But I mean, but at the same...
That's hard. But, if I'm a public school parent, that is hard to stomach.
And it's hard to stomach. But here's what another hot take is... And
bring
I
me
get
all
it.
Your hot takes. I want them.
Well, and part of it is, it's like, listen, friends. I get it. Especially when it comes to Titan Stadium. It's a lot of money. And it's like, I'm not even going to get to go to those games because it's going to be so expensive. And it's like, I get it. But... We are upset at past decisions because when the city and the state said yes to having a professional football team, part of saying yes means you're gonna be helping build this stadium.
Part of what we agreed to at the time.
Yeah. I'm not saying it was a good agreement. I'm not saying it's a right agreement. I'm just saying. It is what it is.
It's the one we have. And it's going to be a big task to go to the family, ownership family, and say, hey, we want to adjust the terms. Right. I understand fully.
Right.
That is going to be, we're going to get a Super Bowl. We're going to get NCAA men's and women's. I think we're going to get a Grammys. Like, I think we're going to get some big things that happen.
Everything.
Yeah.
Because everyone wants to be in this city. For whatever reason,
right.
We're getting everything.
But it goes back to the first conversation, which is like, everybody wants to be here. But they can't.
Right.
Like, you can't. Maybe I'll be able to go to some of those events. I don't know. I don't much care about that. But like, it just, to me, the whole thing, it's like, so Nashville's budget as a city is around $2 billion. We spend half of that on education. And I don't know anybody who would stand up and say the city's delivering $1 billion in value to the residents. Like, we're spending $1 billion. Are we actually getting $1 billion back? And I would much rather see us, and again, like, 40 Metro Council members, none of them experts in education. We have a school board that's...
But our country loves to put non-experts in positions.
We're into it right now. That hasn't been our historic trend.
We love it.
I think what we are doing now, and again, I'm not going to take that bait, other than to say...
take the bait.
No, I mean, doing it the way we've always done it, maybe it's not working. And so I'm not saying that like doing it this way is the right approach, but I also would argue like, yeah, but like if doing it the way we've always done, it's not giving us the results. Maybe we should look at like the execution or whatever. But like, again, the biggest complaint I hear in the city now is all the traffic calming areas of the city, the bumps on cut throughs and things like that. We've got them in our neighborhood. And I'm like, man, I don't want people going 50 miles an hour down my street. So I'm okay with this because I have kids who play in the yard that people need to slow down. Your life is not that important. It's just
get off your phone and slow down.
Yeah. This is okay. Here we go. I'm going to bring a take. Drive. If you are on the roads in this city, drive like you're not the only person driving in this town. Like, have some self-awareness for the people around you.
Right.
One time, please. Just, like, act as though the world doesn't revolve around you, and yet you are a part of a symphony of people trying to get around this city.
Right.
The number of times I sit at a light for 30 seconds because someone's on their phone is...
It's crazy.
It's crazy.
And part of it is like, I'm not saying I have not been guilty of such a thing.
Sure, but blow me up.
And
lay on the horn. Yeah, let me know.
Part of it is a lot of people know this now that I've been doing like a No Phone Friday thing. And so I'm back on doing No Phone Friday. I'm like, don't use my phone the whole Friday. Have an away message set on my phone. And when I was starting it, I was like, oh my goodness. I drive so distracted. And I realized that because I wasn't using my phone. I pulled out some CDs, using CDs in my car.
Oh, man.
Like, just revisiting, like, old burnt CDs that I made. And
did you have your Case Logic?
Yeah.
No, you know what I'm talking about. Oh, yeah, don't look at me like that.
Yeah. And so, like, we need to get off your phone, drive slow. You're not – everyone's trying to get somewhere.
Here's the thing.
Yeah.
The state passed a law a few years ago for hands-free driving. I got pulled over one morning driving my girls to, this is probably COVID, maybe 21.
Sure.
Driving my girls to daycare. Motorcycle cop pulls me over. I saw you pull out your phone and I was like, these children want me to play Moana or something.
Right.
And my phone, I can't tell Spotify on an Apple device, play Moana on right. Spotify. It wants to play it on Apple Music.
Right.
Apple, just let me command any app to do anything. But like it negates the hands-free legislative laws uh-huh. that we have. If I'm in the middle of doing something and I need to change the directions of my phone, right. what they're asking me to do is pull my car over to do that.
That's yeah.
Thanks, but no thanks.
Thanks, but no thanks.
But I do think hands-free driving makes a ton of sense.
Yeah,
so when I see people holding their phone up to their ear or they're on speaker, but their hand is on the phone, like one hand, I'm like, go get some AirPods. Go get something.
Right.
Or just use speakerphone.
Use speakerphone.
Put your phone right. into a thing, like a dash attachment, yeah. whatever. But like, again, every time you hold your phone while you're driving, you're giving less attention to what you're doing.
Now, here's the thing. So, I still think that those of us who were alive and driving in the 90s and even early 2000s still were driving more distracted than those of you on your cell phones.
Oh, could not disagree more.
Brother, we were pulling down visors with CDs, looking through the CDs.
Yeah, but you had also memorized. But you had memorized where the CDs were.
On your lap as you're trying to drive.
But if you did that at a stoplight, it wasn't a big deal. The difference.
Were you?
Listen. So I will say, I'll use myself as an example. I'd probably memorize the first 30 like pages of my CD case.
That's pretty impressive.
I mean, the first like 15 were Dave Matthews, so it wasn't hard. But there were a lot fewer people on the road in Nashville 25 years ago.
Sure.
Like half as many.
Sure.
And we haven't really added a bunch of more roads. So like, it was just, I mean, going from, so we lived in Mount Juliet toward the end of my senior year.
Which Mount Juliet's popping off right now.
It's
nice.
I saw a thing the other day. I meant to bring this up earlier. I saw a thing that said, and I don't remember if it was 2010 or 2000, but I thought it was 2010, that said that Metro Nashville had grown 25% in terms of population.
Wow.
Now, so we've already said that that's not a lot of new homes.
No.
It's a lot of new apartments, condos. Right. You drive down to, what's it called? Capitol View over there by the new HCA headquarters downtown.
Yeah.
There's not a house over there. It's all apartments.
Yeah.
You go drive down West End or wherever. Yeah. What's the name of the school that used to be there on West End across from Elmington? Was it Aquinas College?
Oh, yeah. Well,
just down the street here. It's like there used to be a college that met in like a bunch of old historic homes.
Yeah, that's right.
Many of those are gone now.
Yeah.
They didn't replace it with a bunch of tiny homes.
No. Uh-uh.
So like we're adding people to areas where, I mean, unless you're willing to live like a Manhattanite or a Brooklynite,
right.
you're not raising a family of five in a 900 square foot apartment. Like it's just not happening in a place like Nashville where you have the option to live like, bear with me. Smyrna, Laverne, like the borough, or Hermitage, Donelson, Matt. Like you're not living downtown in 900 square feet with two kids.
Well, and
it's just
like,
not.
And,
it's not.
And it's like the
doable.
People want this Nashville to be this very urban, city sprawl, and to be very urban like. But we
not
but
with our zoning policy. It's never going to happen.
It's never going to. Well, what was that?
Isn't with our zoning policy the way it is today?
So
like, until I can take my own property and say, I want to build four houses on this property.
Right.
They would all be about 2/10 of an acre.
Sure.
It would not be pretty.
Uh-uh.
But I could build, I'm not saying I am not
mean.
A contractor, but someone could come to me and say, hey, I'm going to build you a house if you'll let me build three more right here. You don't need an acre. You have a school that has ball fields and there's other ball fields over here. Like you don't need a yard.
Yeah.
What we need is four 2,800 square foot homes built on this property where these kids can go to this school. Like that's what we need. But I can't do that today. And you think about if you've flown over Nashville of late.
Yeah.
There are big there are huge swaths of this city that do not have houses on them.
Right.
We're never going to build homes in Radnor. We're never going to build homes in Percy Warner.
Right.
What's over by you in East?
East Park and
Shelby. Like that. Well, those things are. Stuff. We're never going to give up those areas to build homes.
Right.
But there's lots of places that have 3/4 acre lots, full acre lots. You could build 3 and 4 homes on, but the city policy or zoning policy won't allow for it.
Yeah.
And so until we, and again, like the bigger issue is like, if I ask my neighbors, they don't want it.
Oh, no.
They don't want another 200 homes in our neighborhood. But the answer is like, do you want your kids to live here? Because if you do, unless you're going to deed them your home,
sure,
they're never going to be able to afford to live here.
Well, and I mean, and I think that's the problem that we face. And I want to, you know, and whether it's with public schools, whether it's with the growing of a metropolitan area, you know, and the lack of sensible public transportation, you know, roads and lights and all the things that make that make it moving around the city, you know, somewhat like sustainable and reasonable and makes sense. The reality is that
even
like,
possible.
Well,
like
even possible is that we've got people have to change their way of thinking, of imagining what life is supposed to be like, quote unquote, or what life could be like. It's like the reality of the world we live in and the imagination and thought of what we think I should be living in. It's like, oh, like my grandparents or my parents, this is the way that they, it's like, yeah, the city, the states that you live in are with more people than when your grandparents lived there.
100%.
And so to have this thought that, like, I'm going to have the same kind of work and living and life experience as my great-grandparents or my grandparents
or even your parents,
is, like, we have to begin to think fundamentally differently about, like, all of how we are arranging and organizing society.
Life, yeah. And so I think that what you're saying absolutely tracks in a city like Nashville.
Sure.
However, if you want to go, if you want to move to, I mean, I'm not trying to pick on anybody. So let me think of a city. If you want to move to Bowling Green and
BG.
And live just like the parents and grandparents did, you can probably do that there.
Yeah.
Because their population hasn't grown by 25% in 15 years. They're not. They're effectively a bedroom community of Nashville, and it's in another state.
Yeah.
And not, I mean, it's not close. It's 60 miles to Bowling Green.
Yeah.
But like, you can't, so maybe the better way to frame it, if I may, would be to say, you can't expect to live in Nashville the way your grandparents lived in Nashville 80 years ago.
Yeah.
The cities are not remotely the same any longer.
But and that's just cities in general. I would say that's just like,
well, some
general.
Cities haven't grown like that
well,
though, right?
Yeah, I mean, but I mean like, but people, but like, the populate like the amount of humans that exist
sure
is more
yes globally yes but even
globally,
in the US I want to say the US was like 100 million people in like the 40s and 50s maybe even less than that. I mean the best estimates today is 340 350
and that's what I'm saying, there's just more humans, and it's like, because going back to healthcare, we have done an excellent job on creating longevity of life and not necessarily
quality
of life.
Yeah,
we have achieved, or we steadily are trying to achieve quantity, but are we achieving quality? And that's been a conversation that I've been circling for a while, which is like, which is more important for people, quality of life or quantity of life? And the reality is that my opinion is that people still care off about, but I want you to not die, and I'd rather have you here than not here.
Yeah,
but like. But what if your quality is not great and you're not able to live like a really quality, healthy life? It's like, but you're still breathing and I can still go visit you.
Actually, we were talking earlier before we turned the microphones on about you recently had your first trip down to the panhandle of Florida.
Yeah.
So
I'm a Rosemary guy.
Okay.
38 Pat.
Okay.
I'm become the Black Mirror of 38.
I'm here for it.
I don't think there's any competition, so it's fine.
I just sighed really heavy to the listener. So here's my observation of my wife and I have been going down there for all 10 years of our married life together. Yeah. Sometimes just once a year, but every now and then we get to go like two or three times. We love going down there. I know it's, you said bougie earlier. Where we go, we like to go because it is kind of off the beaten path. And like, you don't really, if you're not staying there, you don't really have much need to be in this little pocket over there. But my observation every time we go is everyone who's working here doesn't live here. Every single person who's at a coffee shop, restaurant, setting up the furniture on the chairs on the beat, like they are commuting down to this area from somewhere. It's at least 5-10 minutes away. Granted, it's an experience. The reason I bring that up is like, I think Nashville's turning into that.
Oh, sure.
Which is the folks who are in the service industry here can probably no longer afford to be here.
Yeah, I mean, that's the LA thing. That's the LA problem.
So we're making a conscious choice.
Yeah.
We're making the city, maybe it's not conscious. Maybe it's just, what's the word I'm looking for here? It's like the elation of like, look how great the city is. Right. And it's like, for some people, for folks who can afford to travel and stay here, it's pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
The folks serving you at 5th and Broad or in 12 South or in Green Hill or even in East. Maybe East is like one of the areas where like you could live in Madison and you're not totally divorced from your area of town.
Sure.
But like if you're serving someone food on Broadway, the odds are that you do not live in a 5-mile radius of Broadway.
And if you do, it's because you're working that job and another job and another job.
Sure.
You've got three jobs.
I think the danger that we face I think your point is super well taken on the city is supposed to evolve. It should evolve if it's doing so organically, kind of according to the number of people who want to be there and all these different things. New York evolved, Boston evolved, like all these different areas where like the urban, the Acela corridor from Boston to DC is wild.
Right.
Can't get more urban than that. It looks the way I expect London or Paris look on a map from space. Pretty gray in there. A lot of buildings, a lot of roads, lot of transit, things like that. Nashville doesn't look like that. No. You look at Nashville from above on like a radar image, like it's a lot of green. We still have a lot of trees. We've got a lot of parks.
And which we love, which we want that, but it's like.
But what we're building is a 30A.
Like, uh-huh.
What we're building is like almost a resort community.
Yeah, we are.
And again, we can talk about whether that's good or bad, right, wrong, and different. But it certainly is built with a particular person in mind to the exclusion of the people who are needed to make it work. And again, I'm like, you've already alluded, you've made multiple references to right wing, whatever. That's fine. Let me go back.
We got some time.
I would also plug our previous podcast. If you haven't heard me on Patrick before, go back and listen because there's been some really good conversation about stuff. The city of Nashville is not right wing, but our policies, the things that we're like, we have maybe the most progressive mayor in the history of Nashville.
Oh, absolutely.
And
he's doing amazing.
Sure. And an incredibly progressive council.
Yeah, absolutely.
However, schools, not materially better. Transit, maybe getting there. We did vote. We passed.
Yep.
The sort of like stage one of like a 10-stage transit plan.
Right.
I'm going to plug another podcast if you don't mind.
Sure.
Okay. And the reason I'm plugging it in this room is because it's about Nashville.
Yeah.
Jamie Holland, who's a former council member, attorney here in Nashville, he and another gentleman do Pod Bless Nash. So at Pod Bless Nash.
Nice.
And it's their take on just like the goings on in Nashville. And of late, they've been really hard on our elected officials. I'm not saying this as a conservative. I'm saying it as like, I freaking live here. Some of the stuff we're doing is like malpractice, like dumb stuff. And these are folks that are like supposed to have the best vision of Nashville possible. And it's like, we're not doing anything. And so like we did a bunch of things back not long after you and I met. I got asked to serve on a board for this thing called Nashville Next. It was all about the next Nashville of the next 25 years.
That's right.
And the only thing I learned during that process as like I'm a community person.
Sure.
Everybody wants progress, but not where they live. I want to see Nashville change, but not my neighborhood. I want your neighborhood to change because you're close to 440. You're close to, but where I live, I like it just like it is. Don't even think about encouraging change here. And that was basically everywhere.
But what kind of change, I guess?
So one of my big, like, I this is years ago. I looked at a map of the city and I was like, okay, we're talking about transit. We can't even get a line, a dedicated line from downtown to the airport approved. Like, the amount of traffic on 40 on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and Monday.
Yeah, it's bad.
For cars going from downtown to the airport, either picking up or dropping people off, is crazy.
Yeah.
Now, I know we'd be, quote, taking money out of Uber and Lyft's pockets, whatever. But we should have a dedicated transit line from the airport to downtown Nashville.
And I thought that was coming. Now.
Maybe it, well, we shall see.
Right.
But again, like, that's one thing that we could do that I think a lot of people would support.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, not people along that line. They don't want a train going by their house at all, every 20 minutes of the day. And it's like, well, do you want more traffic or do you want to move people in bus rapid transit or an actual, like, you know, we have the Nashville Star that connects Nashville to Lebanon. It's a literal train car and it is a nice program.
Yeah.
It's not. We can't scale that anymore.
Right. We can't scale it anymore. Well, yeah.
There's a lot of things that the city could be doing. Yeah. We can't even start the car to have the conversation. And so as long as we have zoning the way we have it, as long as we don't do rapid transit, meaningful transit, I can't get from my neighborhood. I don't even know where the bus stop is from my neighborhood. It's not a great sign.
No,
I've lived
there for eight years,
and I don't know how I could get on rapid transit.
I think that's the hope with the new transit is that that kind of stuff becomes possible. And I think that you're right that, like, it is, I think you said it pretty well in that, like, people want change to come and want things to progress, but they don't want that to happen in their neighborhood. I mean, this is true of the West Nashville Bellmead population. Like, they didn't want train tracks commuter tracks coming down through West End. Like, they didn't want that, you know? And so, and part of it is, it's like, my opinion is that, you know, my little other hot take, I have two very spicy transit hot takes. We should be, 440 should be a toll road, period. I don't want to hear anything else about it.
Ooh.
Toll road, you don't need 440. 440 is a beautiful benefit for all of us, and I love it, but you can get to where you need to get without 440. You should be able to, I want us to toll it and take the money and put it back into the roads, back into transportation. The other thing I want to toll, this is the even hotter spicy take. All these extra counties, I'm looking at you, Williamson, Wilson, Rutherford, etc. counties, you want to come into Davidson County with your car? Tax. Or toll. It's a toll to come into Davidson County. Another toll.
If you're not a resident.
Yeah, not a resident. Another toll you're going to have. The inner sprawl, this would include me, the inner sprawl of downtown, downtown Nashville.
Mm-hmm.
No cars.
You mean like what they just tried to do in New York and that the president's trying to kill.
Yeah.
And
like part of it's like, that's, to me, it's like, I know cities that have tolls. Now, I'm not saying, now, we can have the debate about like who and what and how we allocate those monies because it will be lots.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not saying that, and part of it is it's like owning a car costs money. So like you gotta put gas in your car. So if you want to take that gas car and park it somewhere, but if you want to encourage, now granted, you need a couple things to happen. You need trains, you need buses so if I can't take my car, I wanna pay the toll, I wanna be able to get on a nice, good, safe bus or train to get me to where I need to get to for my concert or my ball game or my restaurant or whatever. But I think we need
440
more tolls.
Initially. Like, my understanding is that when 440 was initially built, it was a means of trying to keep 18-wheelers out of downtown interstates.
Right.
And I'm sure it served that purpose for a time.
A time.
And then, like, 840, right? Like, hey, you don't want to be driving through downtown Nashville from 3:30 to 6:30, so just take 840 around, you know, the south side of town. Tolling, it's interesting. I think... Yeah, you basically got to have a like for like, right? Which is like, well, if you're going to make me pay, even let's say it's $1.50 to get on 440, I need to have something reliable, clean, that I can do otherwise. Like, you got to give me a like for like switch.
I'm happy to have that conversation.
I feel like we've talked about this on this podcast before. So if we've already talked about it, like, I love Paris's metro system, which is basically a spider web of metro cars. Lines underground, above ground, obviously in Nashville. Yeah. Folks, if you're not from here, we're never going to dig anything in this city.
Not a chance.
Not going to happen. It's never going to go underground because of all the limestone. So, like, just disabuse yourself of that. Anything we do is going to have to be above ground.
Right.
But, like, we do have corridors.
Yeah.
I think about all the pikes. Franklin, yep. Harding,
yep.
Lebanon, Nolensville, Charlotte. Like, we could reasonably do something with the pikes to do hub and spoke in the downtown or whatever. The problem with that is that it's just, like, Nashville's kind of big. Like, Davidson's a big county. And yep. if you wanted to go from, I'll use Brentwood as, like, that's sort of where our family is near. If I wanted to go from Brentwood to Donelson, like, on a hub and spoke system, I either have to get on a line that takes me into downtown that then pushes me back out toward Donelson. Right. Or I've got to sort of, like, piece together a route around right. the east, southeast side of town to get there. Each of those things have pros and cons. And then at the end of the day, it's like, or I could just drive.
Or I could just drive.
And so you got to find the economics of it have to make sense. Yeah. I'm not opposed to doing some sort of surge pricing.
Yeah. Yeah.
I do think that we have an opportunity. Again, the whole thing comes down to, like, I'm gonna step out into uncomfortable and say it's probably possible that you and I both wouldn't have any issue paying a toll.
Yeah.
To get on 440.
Yeah, there are a lot of folks who I'm advocating for. Well, yeah, it, so sure,
you're okay with it.
I'm okay with
it. So you're right. saying you'd be willing to pay
for absolutely.
It? Absolutely. I'm happy to pay a buck to cut 15 minutes off my drive. I'm late all the time with kids, exactly. so like I'm.
Yeah.
We are. I live life on the quote cutting it close. Right. Like all we ever do is cut it close. So like I would be happy to pay a little bit more. There are a lot of folks who couldn't afford to pay a lot more.
I get it.
And I would be, now hear me folks. I'm super into making people who don't live here in the city pay to come in and use our roads. Maybe not our interstates, but if you want to get off at West End or you want to get off at Gallatin Pike, maybe you got to pay a dollar to go eat dinner in East Nashville. Like, sorry, not sorry.
Right.
Because like technically we're the ones paying for that stuff. Sure. And you're like, I've felt this way for quite a long time about Preds. Nashville SC, Titans, like, we sure are carrying a lot of the burden for this stuff. And I know a lot of people who have season tickets to those events are not necessarily all from Davidson County, but all you're paying for is the tickets. You're not paying to build that stadium. You're not paying, like, it's just a different ballgame.
Right.
So I'm going to go back to 30A. If you go 65 South down and you go to Destin, if you want to get across the Intracoastal there, you have to pay a toll. I think it was like $250, right. $275 or whatever.
Yeah.
You can go down an extra like 10 miles and do the one that takes you straight into Seaside Watercolor.
That's right.
There's no toll there.
No toll.
But do you really want to drive 50 minutes out of the way? Probably not.
Probably not.
Not to save $2.
Not,
so like the state of Florida figured out the cost, the opportunity cost of going out of your way to get to the same location is just too high. $2 is not enough to make someone drive out of their way.
Yeah.
So like, I think you raise a good point that like congestion pricing, surge pricing, especially around events, like I don't necessarily have an issue with it.
It won't be received well because like, again, it's one of those things where if something is in place when I arrive, I'm fine with it. But if it's not there and you try to put it in, I'm going to resist it. So like it will be a massive resistance on by probably most people to do some type of tolling in Nashville because we don't have it. But if I move to Florida or I move to Chicago, where there's tolls, it's just like, well, that's just a part
it's
of living.
Yeah, it's a part of life.
It's a part of life living here. Whereas, like, if a new city or a new state tries to do that, people are like, bup, 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 bup,
we started our conversation, though, with the thing that you said you don't like, which is, like, I don't like to have to pay for parking. And what this entire conversation, over the 25 years you've been here, Nashville's gone from an unpaid parking city
to a
paid parking city, and nobody complains.
Well, I complain.
But you complain because you remember what it was like before.
Well, and part of it is just like, you know, the reason, like, it's like the double-edged sword of technology. It's like the only reason that they're doing what they're doing now is because, like, oh, we can just put this sign in the ground, put this QR code up, and it's like, now we can charge people to park on the side of this road here. And I'm just like, I'm okay with the city parking because it's cheap. They made it cheap. So if you park in one of those spots that...
So you're okay with the parking that technically you own being super cheap.
Yeah, because
the parking that other people own...
Because it's too expensive. They're like, if you're like, first hour's free, okay, cool.
This is such a good moment.
Yeah.
Like
now, I know that we've got... We have people we're connected to that are working this industry.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, they're not so, sponsoring the podcast, so we're not. So well, yeah, until not they yet. Do that, then, you know.
Sponsor Patrick's podcast, guys. So I think it's interesting. Like, the streets that are paved and have to be maintained and swept and cleaned by the city, like, technically, I think we should charge market rates for that parking. But if somebody's going to put up a garage somewhere, like,
no, I don't have any issue with a garage. With that. Oh, okay. A garage is fine. It's like,
you're talking about a parking lot owned by a
Sherman
restaurant.
Sherman Williams.
Okay.
Sherman Williams closes at 7 6 p.m., yeah. 6 o'clock. And the parking lot's open.
Nobody's buying paint at 6:30.
So it's like, the lot's open. Now, you can put a sign that says, park at your own risk. So, like, if you get broken into or whatever, like, that's on you, boo-boo. Like,
so you would rather... So I want to make sure I understand what we're like. So the issue isn't that if they put a person in the lot and ask you, if you want to park here, you have to give me $10. So, like, the example I like to use is, please don't make this awful for me. But there's a little park south of the Nashville SC Geodis Park Soccer Stadium. Yeah. You can walk from that park to the stadium, and you can park for free.
Yeah.
All along the way, you're passing businesses where they've got a person standing there charging people 10, 15, 20, 25, as much as like $50 to park their cars there.
Boo.
So the fact that they're paying a person to sit there and park people bothers you.
But is that person actually going to be watching my car?
I don't know. I think even the lots where you're paying to park, it's still park at your own risk.
Yeah.
Because there's not a person there for the most part. Now that's it's just a QR code or whatever.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying, yeah. And I think that if you're paying, if you do like one of those things, it's like, if it's one of those private owned like companies, it's like that someone could raise a point. And it's like, I have a level of expectation when it comes to safety.
Just Uber then.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure. But see, I'm just
what we're talking about right now. This is so good. We're talking about like the way I think about it is like, we're going to go to dinner at Super Rica in the Gulch. I could drive and I could park on the street where maybe I'm paying something, although I'm probably not paying Metro Nashville. I could park in a garage. I could Uber with the whole fam. Like, there's multiple ways I can get there. And my personal risk level is different based on all those things, as well as the expense to me.
Yeah.
It's going to be more expensive for me to Uber to and from than to park in that garage or to park on the street or whatever. Like, all I hear us talking about is we have options.
Sure.
The risk profile is different for all of them. Yeah. I'm not mad at any of those folks, including the city charging me to park there. I would just feel better. Like, my question then goes, okay, so what's the money going to? And if they say, oh, it's going to, I don't know, it's going
I'm
to something.
I'm never gonna be okay with like the Sherman Williams as an example that.
Well, I think they should be able to charge for their parking. Well, it's their lot.
They can. They are.
They are. Yeah. And they should be able to.
And I don't like it.
You're super entitled to your opinion on it, and they're super entitled to not care what you think.
And that's right.
The supply is limited. The demand, and again, on a what's the name of that? What's the seafood place over there in East?
Hawkers,
right across from the studio, Woodlands Studio.
Boston Commons.
Yeah. So like that parking lot's empty most afternoons. They charge for parking there.
And used to be free.
Used to be free, and now it's not. And it's like, well, okay, but if I want to go eat at that place and there's no parking at the restaurant, maybe I pay $8 to park there. Uh-uh. Their gamble is that they're going to get enough people who are desperate to park and pay there.
Oh, sure. And they always do.
Even the one person being upset is just like, they don't care about that.
They don't
care.
Well, I mean, of course they don't care. Yeah,
no. Exactly. As long as people pay to park there. Yeah. Well, I mean, like the flip side of it, though, is like they are happy making whatever they're making.
Sure.
If 10% of the lot's full,
sure,
then that would be to lower their prices and have more people park there. Like it's an economies thing for those folks. And that's fine.
Yeah.
But no, again,
not a fan.
But what we're talking about is like, and I think this is an important point. And then we can move on to politics because I know
we got to do that in for relief.
I think what we're talking about ultimately is the speed at which Nashville's changed.
Sure.
And so if you go whatever it is, maybe it's 40 south of like downtown proper, and you go through that like chute of exits where it's Broadway and Church and Charlotte, and like you look around you, it did not look like that 20 years ago.
Oh.
Like 25 story buildings, the Whole Foods is down there now. Like it's just like the speed at which and maybe that's even the bigger thing. What would you say? Like if you were going to add a percentage on the growth of Nashville, X percentage of it is in the downtown core.
Oh my goodness.
I mean, it's got to be 75% of it's happened there. So like a lot of it is in the downtown core, and that's where, like, look, it's not happening in South Nashville. It's just not. Like, Old Hickory between Edmondson and Granny White really hasn't changed all that much. You got the Ardent Life Point buildings there.
Yeah.
But, like, it's mostly still just houses through there. Maybe there's the like the little development right there that's got, you know, some restaurants and – but and then, it, like, you go to Brentwood, from Franklin Road to Granny White, it has basically not changed in 20 years.
And also, and then we're going to move on. Not hot take. Y'all, Nashville, Brentwood people, y'all need to calm down about this Whataburger. That
is that the problem, or is it the Sips place?
It's the Whataburger. Okay. I think it's the Whataburger traffic. What's the other places over there?
It's called Sips or something. It's like an old timey. That sounds so stupid. It's like a soda fountain. That's opened up there that has like all these flavors. It's right there. I should know the names of these streets in Brentwood, but like, yeah, on Franklin Road, Shell Station and the Bank of America right there. The traffic there is obnoxious.
It's even more now.
I know. Well, I was over there the other day because I had my car in the shop there and I couldn't even get to the place to pick up my vehicle because the traffic was so congested.
So is it Sips or is it Whataburger?
I mean, it could be both. Under the impression it was the soda fountain.
Okay, maybe it is. Anyway, I didn't know about this.
It's too much. Y'all do need to calm down. Or just go at like 9.
Yes.
Go at 7. Don't go at 5. People creating more traffic problems. And this is my favorite thing. I love calling it downtown Brentwood because it sounds so like funny. But like, it's literally just an intersection. Like, there's already enough people trying to get out of Brentwood from 4:30 to 5:30.
Whoever
this is making it way worse, and it's just obnoxious. So, okay.
All right.
All right. Let's flip it. Yeah.
So, if you don't know, Wes is our, our most resident conservative.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think.
Have you had any other conservatives on?
I'm sure I have had, but none that who we talk about.
Sure, that's fine. Yeah. I would love to put that to the test at some point, but I can go back and look at the guests.
Yeah. There are definitely some libertarians, definitely some
for sure.
Some apolitical people that I've had on for sure that I know of. But so where do we even start?
Yeah, I mean
I don't have much, we're not gonna do a whole lot of it. We'll come back and do a more politics thing later. But it is interesting. I guess maybe the question is, as someone who very much, I would say I have never taken you to be, if there's a spectrum of folks within like.
This could go so many places.
Of people who are conservative or.
Like hardcore. Yeah.
Hardcore. I put you, and a lot of people that I know, whatever camp they fall in, is not someone who is full send, like, in the extreme category.
I appreciate that. I wouldn't call myself an extreme Republican.
Right. Yeah. And I would even say that now with the extreme Republican Party used to call those people Tea Partiers, which I imagine there's probably still some people who identify themselves as Tea Partiers. I don't know, but I would imagine so. But I would say more so, like, it's now like I'm a MAGA.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a MAGA.
There are still Tea Partiers.
Right.
They are not the majority any longer. No. So like I would, and that's actually probably a good place to start kind of this segment, right? Which is like at the risk of bringing up names people don't know about, Paul Ryan, Kevin McCarthy, Liz Cheney, Ted Cruz, Mike Lee, Marco Rubio. Those were like the original Tea Partiers. These are folks who ran after the financial crisis. And the entire reason they ran was, or the majority of them ran, was, or sort of came into like popularity, was like mortgage bailouts, car bailouts. Like,
sure.
Why are we talking about paying off people's mortgages when I've been paying my mortgage? Like, why would, like, they were like this, just the inequity of like what they were talking about really bothered a lot of people. And that's where that whole thing came from. I think Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan are still that. I think you could argue Marco Rubio, Mike Lee, Ted Cruz, like,
sure.
They've maybe shifted more toward MAGA, even if they're not fully like Matt Gaetz, whatever.
Marjorie.
Yeah, MTG, Lauren Boebert, like those guys, they, whatever.
Right.
Those are the people in the party that I typically vote for that don't represent my values, there's very little they could put forth that wasn't antagonistic towards someone that I would support.
Right.
So like, again, there's a lot of things we could talk about with regard to politics in city, state, country, globally. But I think it's pretty fair to say that over the last 10 years, politics globally has shifted rightward. And I don't mean toward Marjorie Taylor Greene. I just mean back toward the center, away from like more progressive thoughts. I think the lion's share of that is due to what had previously been a very open immigration attitude globally. And I mean, sure. And I'm not talking about guys, don't miss me with your emails about immigration in America when I'm talking about globally, right?
Right.
I'm talking about
I hear you.
Africa. I'm talking about Syria. Yeah. I'm talking about parts of Ukraine, parts of the world where people are under attack or countries are under attack. And like, there has been a very, very pro-immigration stature, posture toward people who are leaving areas of activity. And you can call it war. You can call it whatever. The lack of assimilation has moved a lot of people away from like, oh, like we're going to welcome everyone. You can call that right wing. That's fine. I think that's what basically describes not the reason that Republicans won in 2024, but it's a big reason they won.
So I guess the question is, you know, you look at the person of Donald Trump,
mm-hmm.
and you hear the way that he is communicating about himself and everything that he wants to usher in,
mm-hmm.
or usher out, as someone who identifies in this conservative, like, larger party.
Yeah, let's call it like the biggest possible umbrella. Right. Yes.
Biggest possible umbrella. Does the way that he communicates,
mm-hmm.
and the things that he is, and even some of our own people in Tennessee have even proposed, you know, like some pick me bills.
Yeah.
Is what I call them.
Let's talk about that.
And so like,
there's zero chance that the president is going to be elected to a third term. It would require a constitutional convention. It's not going to happen. The fact that my representative is proposing this kind of stuff is frustrating. It's why, Andy, if you're listening, I gave to your opponent last year. I'll give to her again when she announces she's going to run. Like, I'm not into that. I'm not back to the MTGs, the Laurens, the Matt Gaetzes. Like, they are such a poor representation of what it means to actually be a conservative.
Right.
They can be populist. They can be pro-nationalist. Sure. Like, there's a lot of things you can be. It's not illegal to think that way.
No.
I'm not here for that. However, I don't agree with it. I think it's disruptive.
Those who are
the things that he said. I want to answer your question directly.
So like,
the things he says. The way I've posed it to folks in the past is like, well, I wouldn't have said it that way. and I might not even agree with him fully.
Sure.
But if you were to ask me, do you think he's on the right track in some of these things? I would say, like, okay, I'll pick one. Tariffs. No, this is so stupid. It's so fundamentally anti-economically. It's like anti-economic literacy. Tariffs make everything more expensive for us, and it ruins trade between countries. I think that he's talking about it. It's just because he likes to talk about things that are different, and he's going to be the guy to fix something.
I'm different.
Whatever, man.
Fixing it, right.
Tariffs is stupid. I have, so the thing that I'm most, I just do the biggest eye rolls with him on is like, I alone can fix it, bro.
Right.
And y'all can, if you do want to find me on my Twitter at Wes Hartline, where I talk about, you're not a king, man. You're not a king.
Not a king.
We're going to replace you in 3 3/4 years in another election. There's going to be another election in 1 1/4 years to reelect the full House and a third of the Senate. Like, you're not a king. Right. You don't do any of this on your own. That's like the system we set up. I say we collectively, but like the system that the founders of this nation set up early on was intended to make it hard to do stuff. And so I'm not a pro executive order person. Right. I didn't like it when President Obama did it. I didn't like it when Trump did it. I didn't like it when Biden did it. And I don't like the executive orders now. Pass some bills, like pass laws instead of executive orders that can be undone day one of the new administration. It makes it so hard
for
people
theater.
To predict.
It's such theater.
Well, it is theater, but it's also kingly. It's like we don't decree stuff.
Right.
I almost cussed there because I'm like very passionate about it. But like we don't decree things.
Yeah.
We put things up for a vote. We used to do this, and that's maybe my bigger issue is like Congress is terrible out loud. Like we haven't expanded the size of our U.S. House of Representatives in almost, if not, it's actually probably been more than 100 years. The district sizes are way too big to truly represent the will of the voters. Is your Congressman Rose where you are? Okay. So Congressman Rose, where Patrick lives, Congressman Ogles, where I live, they represent about 750,000 people. That is too many people for any true representative to really understand what's going on in their area of the city. So like the state of Tennessee has 9. I would argue we should probably have like 50 representatives. Like a state of 8 million people, like if we had 50 representatives, each with a couple 100,000 voters, those individual voters would be far more represented than are today. And then the Senate is built the way it is for a reason, those things. Right. So I don't love the way he says things, but I also don't think he's wrong about some pretty key things, which is like border security is important. Being the obvious world leader. I do not want to be the world's policeman. Don't come at me. I don't want to be the world's policeman. I think that the region of Europe should have been doing more over the last 30 years, 40 years since the Cold War to like, I don't know, take some responsibility for your own safety and security instead of piggybacking on U.S. funding, NATO, UN, all these different things. I'm not saying that they weren't trying to like recover from stuff, but we've got people here who need, like our infrastructure is crumbling. We talked about like, I want to overbuild America to such an extent that we don't think about bridges and tunnels in terms of 50-year timelines, but like 250-year timelines. And so I think the president has some good things to say about some of those things. I just think his rhetoric is not helpful. Like, it's just not helpful. I do think he is fighting a battle coming from behind on some key issues. Like, it's a true thing that a probably 3 out of 4, if not 4 out of 5 people in this country would say, yeah, if people are coming to the states with a criminal background illegally, like they're crossing the border, they're not claiming asylum, they should be deported. That's not an issue that's like the country is split on that. Now, if you're talking about birthright citizenship, I disagree with the president on that.
Oh,
like,
sure.
That's in our Constitution, and you just can't undo that stuff. I saw a tweet this morning with someone saying it was one of those like engagement farm accounts talking about like, oh, this is the judge who struck down President Trump's legal executive order to end birthright citizenship. It's like, that's not a thing.
No.
Like, you saying that, you typing those words into a machine to both generate agreement and outrage.
Right.
It's just stupid. It's truly a falsifiable statement. That he says that stuff irritates me.
Yeah.
However, it's not super far removed from like, we're going to forgive a bunch of loans for people. It's like, well, you can't do that. And you can't, like, saying it doesn't make it true.
Mm.
So like, that's probably my biggest frustration is like, if you want to forgive student loans for a wide swath of Americans, go pass a bill.
Right.
Don't do it with an executive order. Go win support in both the House and the Senate. Find the justification for it in the law. And if it passes and I lose, then I'll take my gut punch. But don't just say you're going to do it like a king. I'm not here for that. So I think his rhetoric, and again, like we've been on this roller coaster with this particular person.
Last time we were stuck inside for a big part of it.
We were stuck inside for a bit. I thought we had met since 2020. This person's been in the national consciousness for 10 years now. Coming up on 10 years. Like the famous ride down the escalator. I think it was like April, May in 2015. in like 18 months time, we're going to be talking a lot less about this person because their time in the sun will have left. They won't be able to run again. Right. I think that's going to be healthy for the country.
It is.
I would personally love to see a return. And again, I'm saying this as a right of center person, a return to centrism. Like, can we work together? Can we pass an immigration policy in this country that I don't necessarily care what the far right and the far left think, but if 65% of the country is for right. it, then maybe we could pass something and we could actually do some things. I think the danger we are in right now as a country is like anything they do, I'm opposed to. And it's like, well, wait a second. Would it be good for the country? Like you say, I would never support a bill from this party. And it's like, but what if it was good?
Yeah.
Like what if you could separate the person from the policy? Again, if you go back to 2010, the last truly groundbreaking legislation that has been passed through Congress was the Affordable Care Act. And when you told people what it did, polls did all this work. If you told people what it did, they approved it. And it wasn't by like 20 points, but call it like 10, 15 points.
Sure.
And as soon as you change the name from the Affordable Care Act to Obamacare, support flipped.
Right.
And so it's like, okay, well then if you can take the person associated with the policy away
right.
and you just tell people and again, I'm a big fan of what is it intended to do versus what are they saying it's going to do? Like there's a lot of weirdness there. But like, what's the intent?
Right.
If we could just talk about the intent and separate it from the person, I think we would find a lot more support for stuff.
Sure.
It's just that the personality of this person is really all anyone's paying attention to these days.
Yeah.
Like to put on paper that if, quote, Ukraine hadn't started this war with Russia,
this
like, I'm sorry,
talk.
Man.
That's crazy.
Again,
talk.
You can miss me with any commentary about, well, they, no, man, no. They were
talk.
Just sitting there,
yeah.
and they got attacked,
yeah.
and I know it's a quagmire, and it stinks, and people are dying, and I agree,
yeah.
it would be good to end the war. You know how we could end the war? Russia could just leave Ukraine. That's how we could end this war, but they're not going to do that.
Yeah.
So we're at a crossroads. We're at an impasse.
Yeah. Yeah.
Same thing with what's going on with Israel and the Middle East. Like, if they would just stop trying to murder Israelis all the time, from all sides, like it's a truly like they're fighting a multi-front battle. If people would just stop trying to kill Israelites, like people would stop dying all over the place.
Or,
but we just can't get them to quit doing it.
I mean,
you can say whatever you want. I'm just saying, like,
yeah, I'm just saying,
we could just stop the fighting by stopping killing each other.
If people would just stop killing each other,
yeah,
no matter the side they're on, just stop killing each other
or being antagonistic for no reason. Like,
and I understand that there's layers to that. I understand it's not a very simple thing. And
none of the things we're talking about are simple.
Yeah.
If they were, people would have come together to resolve these things. But the argument that like it's too hard to solve, like again, miss me with that. It's not too hard to solve. We're just dealing with personalities.
Well, I mean,
so,
I would say that like the hardness is that it for some people is connected to their like to their faith, to their identity,
yeah.
to their history, and like just to tell people that like, hey, you need to like get over this. Like it just doesn't.
Yeah.
People doesn't
love a strong
work.
Man.
Yeah.
And at the risk of offending people, like our last president wasn't much of a strong man. He was kind of go along to get along. Like I feel like the last 4 years for the country, like weren't great. And for a lot of reasons. And I'm not saying that I am for a strong man. I'm saying I'm for people who will raise their hand and say, I'm willing to like stick my neck out there and go try to solve problems. What I'm not super interested in is like, I alone can fix it. We're not this, you know, day one, I'm going to fix this thing. It's
right.
like, well, it's been 30.
Right.
Well, and it's
and
not fixed.
That, and I think that part of it is that like, whether, you know, whether or not Biden was, you know, for everyone considered a strongman or not, what you deal with when you come in as a new, administration is you're trying to like make sense and potentially repair or make sense of what has happened last. And the fact that, you know, you have this last administration that came in to literally like probably the worst starting point for anyone, the fact that you're coming off the heels of a global pandemic.
2020 and 21 were really
trying
hard.
And trying to like help put things back together in some way. I would say that like that's a tall order.
Yeah.
No matter which side would have ended up winning.
In 2020.
In that particular election. So it's like, that's a.
But we also weren't going to stay in neutral either, right? You and I, we potted during that time period, which, like, honestly, I've gone back and listened to that. If you haven't listened to that podcast, there's just some really good, like, not rules for life, but like, hey, if you're a work from homer, make sure you make a place for yourself at home to do work. So you, like, your home doesn't always feel like, there's a lot of good, like, nuggets in there.
Good nuggets there, yeah.
But like, this is a thing that I hope you'll have somebody else on to talk about this. Like, I don't think we've talked nearly enough in the last 5 years about how terrible 2020 and 2021 were for so many people. And like, it's America's back or whatever, but people are still dealing with a lot of the, like, the loneliness epidemic has retained.
Yeah.
Even though people are still back doing things, I am concerned that a lot of people who sort of just kind of fell off radars in 2020 and 21 have stayed off radars.
No, yeah. If you were adolescent or college student during that time, from 2020 to, you know, even 2022 for that matter, it has radically changed and altered a lot of the current young adults and mid 20 somethings and lower. I think that, like, the college students now, you know, it's, you know, they still have, you know, remembrance of it and still have had.
I didn't get to walk. Right. I didn't get to graduate. Right. I didn't get to have a senior prom. Yeah.
There's a lot of that.
So my wife and I, and this is anecdotal, but like, it's been backed up by folks talking to me about it, where we'll go and, like, where my children go to school, they are lucky to have a lot of opportunity for fixes on things. Meaning, my daughter's had a bunch of speech therapy, lots of other stuff.
Right.
The number of kids that we see in performances who have speech impediments is wild.
Yeah.
It's wild.
Yeah.
And when you ask people, when you ask teachers, hey, at any point in your either 5, 10, 30-year career, have you ever seen anything like this? They're like, not close.
No.
And it all comes back to, they were in class with teachers who wore masks for 2 years, 3 years, sometimes during the most formative speech phases of their lives. Right. And, like, people are shocked that our kids can't say S's, R's, L's.
Right.
And it's like, we're going to be trying. And again, I'm not saying anybody broke this on purpose, but we're going to be trying to fix that for a long time.
Yeah.
And so I just don't think we have done, I'm a big fan of, like, the postmortem, like, hey, what could we have done differently? What did we do well versus what didn't we do well? I think these last 5 years, honestly, it's 6 years at this point. I hope we will go back and take an inventory of, like, this was a great response. This was a not great response. How can we do that again better?
Yeah.
I'm not entirely sure that
the
current administration is going to be setting that up.
And it's what I'm saying. They put us in a really bad spot with how they responded to the global pandemic. And I think that the one we just had did their very best to try to make some sense of how to help get us, quote unquote, back. Because, like, that's why I found it very interesting that we decided to go back to what we're back to, considering how things played out. Because it's not that administration is, absolutely not the cause of this thing that we all lived through.
We certainly hope not.
Yeah, we certainly hope not. But it's like, it was a matter of, like, how we handle it. It could have been handled better in 2020. That's not even a question.
Yeah.
But, I mean, and that's even state by state. Like, some states, like, were overboard on either direction of this thing.
Can I say, I think one of the things that we learned during 2020 is that, like, and I say this, like, I love my fellow Americans. We were not in it together.
No, yeah. There were moments of togetherness.
Early on.
But yeah, but
even
not, but
I even saw a quote this last week from one of the folks that was advising the Trump administration in 2020, where they basically straight up came out and said, like, 2 weeks to slow the spread was just a talking point. Like, we knew this was going to get out of control. And it's like, people just want you to be honest with them. Like, I would rather you tell me this is going to be really tough than tell me just give it a couple weeks and we'll be fine. And then it's 16 months.
Yeah.
And of, like, what is the reality? Like, I'm an adult. You're an adult.
Yeah.
We're surrounded by adults. Just tell us the truth. And if it really is the flu of 1918, people will figure that out pretty quickly.
Yeah.
But It's not what happened.
And
so,
and the maybe the last thing I'll say, and then
we'll close it.
Is the thing that I wish for all of us is no matter where you find yourself on this scale is, you know, one of the things we say about America is that America is a Christian nation. And whether you say you agree with that or not agree with that, I'm here to tell you, sorry, folks, that's the pool water we swim in. Like, tough. I feel bad for you. Like,
yeah.
if we lived in another part of the world, the pool water would be different. It might be Hinduism. It might be some other religion. But, but we live in America. The pool water is Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
It also is a variety of things and non-things, but the bulk of the pool water, the most of the pool water is that. Now, that being said, I truly think that not enough of us on either side spend enough time wrestling with, like, which call and which identity do I claim more?
Mm-hmm.
Do I claim more my
political
identity,
mm-hmm.
or do I claim more my faith identity?
Yeah.
Now, if you're saying you claim your faith identity more, it should be informing your, and I'm not saying, I mean, this is not me saying, hear me say, that you should be this or that. It's saying that whatever the this or that you choose, you need to be wrestling pretty healthily with the main identity that you're saying yes to.
Yeah. I would definitely, this will be my last thing. It's going to be a recommends.
Yeah.
Big fan of a book that our church community group just recently finished called Practicing the Way by John Mark Comer. Excellent resources online, excellent podcasts. But it starts out, the book begins with, you're a disciple of something. What is it? Right. And so if you don't think you're a disciple of Jesus, then something is discipling you. It might be social media. It might be politics. It might be entertainment industry. There's any number of things. And that book really helped. I mean, I'll admit, like, it helped me reframe, like, am I a Jesus first person, or am I a Jesus when it's convenient person?
Yeah.
And again, like Patrick's saying, like, we're a Christian nation. Like, I would actually say, like, America is a deeply religious nation.
Yeah, and maybe that's a better.
It's just not always faith,
right? And that, and I think that may be a good way to say it too, is that we are a deeply religious nation, but
we're certainly following stuff.
But that is definitely we're definitely following stuff. We're definitely latching onto things. So
yeah, there's healthy ways to do it and unhealthy ways. Again, I want to go back to the like kind of the genesis of the question, and we can stop. Like, I want to see the current administration be successful in ways that I think are beneficial to the country. And I'm more than happy to see them be unsuccessful in things that I think are either illegal or amoral or whatever. It's going to be interesting because, like, we are in the kind of last act of this, hopefully, but we still, 3.5 years is a long time.
It's a long time.
It's a long time. So
it's a long time.
Take care of the people around you in your community. Check on folks. I do think I'm really hopeful that, you know, like I said earlier, I've got 8-year-old, 6-year-old. We're doing all kinds of things, but we're also making a point to say no to stuff so that we can take care of people around us, make time for people that are in our community, and rather than, hey, how are you doing? Like,
right.
Hey,
yeah,
it's been a while.
Right.
Let's go grab coffee.
Right.
Catch me up on what's going on in your life. How can I help you? Yeah. I just think that stuff, it's such a different mentality.
Yeah.
And it makes you more... makes me feel more human to my fellow humans.
That's right.
So anyway, this has been fun, man.
We talked about a lot.
Was it like 90 minutes? We're good.
All right.
This is great. Thanks
for Wes.
Yeah.
We'll see you.